Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're beginning the 47th Anuched. Okay, we're still talking about the reality of the Supreme Lord's having a personal form. Tasmat apanipadi shuter api sadananta swapakash ananda vigraha eva bhagavati tatparyam nanyatreti pratipadayanti. Therefore, even the Shruti statements that he has no hands, no feet, mean to indicate none other than the Supreme Lord, whose personal form is real, unlimited, self-luminous, and blissful. This the Shrutis establish in their words. Okay, the Upanipada is a statement from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. The Supreme doesn't have any hands or feet, etc. The verse that Jiva Goswami is introducing here in this Anuched to show that even those statements about him not having hands and feet are still talking about the Supreme Lord, who has a spiritual body. And this statement is part of the Prayers of the Personified Vedas from the 10th canto, 87th chapter. Tvamakaranak swarad akilakarika shaktidaras tavabalim udvahanti samadantyajayani mishaha varshabujo kilakshiti pater iva vishvasvijo vidadati yatra ye tvadikvita bhavatas chakita. The personified Vedas say, you have no material senses. Well, the verse says akarana. You don't have any senses. The translation says material, but the verse just says no karana. You have no material senses and are self-effulgent, swarat, the sustainer of everyone's sensory powers. Okay, that we hear in the Upanishads many times. The Lord has no senses, but he's inspiring and maintaining everybody else's senses. Akila karaka shakti jaras. You don't have any instruments, but all the active agencies of everybody are maintained by your energies. Okay, continuing. The demigods and material nature herself offer you tribute, while also enjoying the tribute offered them by their worshippers. Just as subordinate rulers of various districts in a kingdom offer tribute to their lord, the ultimate proprietor of the land, while also enjoying the tribute paid them by their own subjects. In this way, the universal creators faithfully execute their assigned services out of fear of you. Okay. Okay. Not only does it affirm that he's maintaining everybody's senses, it's describing his relationships as the Supreme Soul, how everybody's serving him. That means all the universes are being created and maintained by your agents. You're doing everything, even though you don't do it yourself. You do it through your energies and the demigods and others who are your agents. Of course, someone may say, okay, God doesn't have a body. He just has energies. The demigods have bodies. They do all the work. And God himself doesn't have a body. You could say that. This verse doesn't talk about him having a body, but other verses do. There are other places in the Bhagavatam and in the Upanishads where it's affirmed that God does have a body. Anyway, this is what Jiva Goswami says about this. Ayam artaha atrakaranam nama vasyadivat kartri shakti prityaya karya karam kartur binatamam kevala karanatvapanam evavastu angrikritam. Not to... I'll stop there. The meaning of this is follows. We're discussing what is karana, or instrument, or tool, or sense. What does it mean? In general, karana means an instrument, or a tool. Jiva Goswami says, here, karana refers specifically to an object possessing mere instrumentality, like an axe or other tool, which being capable of action only on the impulse of an actor's energy is completely different from the actor. Okay, that's a tool. It's something separate from you that you use to do something. In that sense, the Supreme Lord doesn't have any tools. There's nothing separate from him. His energies are not separate from him. Anyway, continuing. Natu sarupatvapanam api yattarapi yata dahanadau tat shaktyadikam daunartatvat swarat pada niruktau swaineti tritiyanta padasya sarupas shaktav eva pariyavasa nat cha. The word karana, also does not refer to something that belongs to the actor's very self. Sarupa tva apanam. As for example, the actor's own energy and so on, in acts of burning something and so on. So when you burn something, you use fuel, you use a match. Those are tools. But use your own physical energy, that's not a tool, that's part of you. So karana doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean what is inside you. It means what's outside you that you use. Indeed, such innate faculties are instruments only in a secondary sense. You can call them instruments, but that's only a secondary sense. You know, your personal abilities, you can call them your tools, but they're not really tools because they're not separate from you. And in the derivation of the word swarat, which is given here, independent, the component swa has an instrumental case inflection, meaning by yourself, swena, which means by which swarat describes personal energy, that you shine forth by yourself. So swarat means you have your own energy. You don't have an instrument, but you have your own energy. Tato jivasya chidrupatvat panyadinam svato jadatvat tadadina shaktinam tesham binatamanam karanatvam mukhyartameva. Thus, since the jiva is spiritual, and his hands and so on are by nature inert, the literal sense of his hands and other senses being instruments is his hands and so on. They're part of his body. But they are potencies under the jiva's control that are completely different from him. Because the jiva is not his body. So you could say the senses of his body are instruments. You can call them karanas. That's okay. The jiva, his senses are karanas, they're tools, because they are different. His body is separate from him. But the Supreme Lord's body is not separate from him. Tato sau tat asaktatvat sakarana. Twam tu tad antaryami. Tad anasaktatvat tad anapekshaha. Yatat swarat. Sarupa shaktyaiva rajase iti. You, however, okay, and thus, because the jiva has a sense of attachment to those senses, it's said that he possesses instruments. You, however, are the inner controller of the senses. And because you feel no attachment to them, you do not depend on them. Being swarat, which means that you appear as you are by your personal energy only. Okay, that makes sense to me. I don't know if it's clear enough. I'll read the commentary. The same Upanishads, which attract impersonal thinkers with their presentations of the Supreme Truth as undifferentiated and formless, have also much to say about the forms and qualities he supposedly does not have. Sometimes in even one and the same statement. One second. That verse that we alluded to, Jiva Goswami mentioned, Apanipado, here's the whole verse. Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.19. Apanipado javano grahita pashyatya chakshu sashrinotya karna saveti vedyam nachatasyasti veta tam ahur agriyam purusham mahantam. He has no feet or hands, yet he is the swiftest runner and can take anything given him. Though without eyes or ears, he sees and hears. Nobody knows him, yet he is the knower and the object of knowledge. Sages describe him as the supreme original personality of Godhead. Okay, he doesn't have any hands or feet, but he runs pretty fast. And he's able to grab things, run up to you and grab whatever he wants. So he's got something that lets him run and take things, even if we don't call them hands and feet, hands and legs. And even though he doesn't have any eyes or ears, he hears and sees everything. So something's going on there. The commentary says, because the subject of this passage is not specified by any name, someone might argue that the Supreme Being described is not a person. But what does it mean to deny personality to a being who can see without ordinary eyes and who knows without being known? If anything, he's a better person than all the others. And if someone is curious to know his name, that information is also available. The sublime message of the Vedas cannot be understood by superficial reading and whimsical speculation. A serious student of them requires the guidance of a competent spiritual master. What the Shvetashvatara Upanishad intends to say, irregardless of the interpretations imposed by impersonalists, is that the absolute reality is none other than the personality of Godhead. Not some relative or impersonal truth. The senses possessed by the Purusham Mahantam. That's in the verse? Yeah. Tamahur Agyam. They call him the Purusham Mahantam. The senses possessed by this Purusham Mahantam do not fit the strict definition of Karana that's formulated above. They're not separate from him. Only in a secondary way, by way of similarity, does he have senses like the separate instruments provided in material bodies for the use of conditioned souls. The feet and eyes of God are like our feet and eyes because they perform the same functions of moving and seeing. Okay. Just like you can talk about an electric eye, you have some photosensor machine. You can call it an eye, but it's not the same kind of eye that you have. So God's eye is not like your eye either. It doesn't, the mechanics of it are not the same. The sensory faculties of the personality of Godhead do everything done by ordinary sense organs, but much more as well. He can eat with his eyes and see with his feet. In the prayer under discussion, the Shrutis address Lord Narayan as Swarat, ruling by your own power. The reflexive pronoun Swa denies the need for other helpers and instruments. He takes help from others only to give them opportunities to enjoy the reciprocations of serving him. Finite living entities also have innate potencies that serve their possessors as dynamic and cognitive instruments without being separate. Even before a human picks up any external tools, he is making use of his own physical strength. And even before that, in the contemplation of acts yet to be performed, he exercises his powers of thought, discrimination, and determination. The demigods rule the senses of the mass of jivas throughout the universe, and the goddess of material nature supervises the demigods in this. Demigods, however, are imperfect rulers to the extent that they have not completely abandoned selfish desires. The Supreme Lord is Paramatma, inner witness of all embodied creatures, is altogether detached, satisfied with his own internal Shakti. And in the kingdom of the Supreme Lord Vaikuntha, there is no need of an Antaryami Paramatma or of presiding demigods. Everyone allowed to live in Vaikuntha necessarily has only perfect pure desires, and so there is no conflict and no need for one finite being to impose the law, the rule of law over another. In Vaikuntha, no need of laws, no need of government, no need of demigods. You don't even need a supersoul there. Any questions? Sorry, Gepa?
So the question is, why is it said in this verse from the prayers of personified Vedas that everyone is asked out of fear of Supreme Lord? Does it mean that demigods, they have some selfish desires and therefore they have to obey to Krishna's desires and it's some kind of fear involved? We have many such statements in third canto also.
Okay. There's no mention of fear here. This verse doesn't talk about serving out of fear. It says they serve. They carry you tribute. So, the demigods are trustworthy servants. They are not completely unselfish, but they're obedient enough that they can be trusted in maintaining the universe. Is that okay? Or? There's no... Sorry?
What is the need of fear? Because it's that they are servant as well.
But where's the fear coming from? It's not mentioned here.
In the verse from the prayers of personified prayers.
I'm reading it. They offer you tribute. It says nothing about fear. Out of fear of you. Where's that? Yeah. Oh, out of fear. But Chakita, the last word. I'm sorry. Well, okay, that is said also in the Upanishads, and this is the personified Vedas paraphrasing what they say in the Upanishads. Bishasmad Surya Tapati, the sun is shining out of fear of the Supreme Lord. And in Christianity, they talk about fear of God. It's not pure love. If someone doesn't have pure, is not motivated by pure love, then you can say he's got to be motivated by fear of punishment. If you don't have pure love, then you do have selfish motives. And you could deviate from the service of the Lord if you indulge those selfish propensities. And you have to be aware that if I do that, I'm in trouble. Out of fear, I don't do it. I don't indulge my desire to enjoy my senses out of fear that I'll be in Maya, or I'll be in trouble in some way. It's not that the Lord's going to beat me with a stick, but Maya's going to beat me if I deviate. So that's fear. Practicing devotees, what to speak of demigods, even sadhaka bhaktas, have to have that kind of fear of deviating. You know, and the subtle energies of the material energy punish us when we deviate. So the fear is there. I'm sorry, I didn't see it. It was the last word in the verse. Yeah. Okay. Okay, but Jachi Krishna had first. Yeah. Yes.
Probably in the commentary you were mentioning the living entity, before doing any activity, exercises physical strength. And before that, he thinks and discriminates and determines.
Yes.
Is the terms of thinking, feeling and willing is different from the thinking, discriminating, and determination?
Thinking, feeling, will is different than... No, that's the same thing. Discrimination is a process of discrimination. You know, you have alternatives. I could eat more, or I could stop eating. And you use your discrimination to decide, okay, I've had enough, I'm not going to eat anymore. No, I'm not going to take thirds. So... that's thinking and willing. But the willing is based on making a discrimination. I'm going to do something, or I'm not going to do something, or I'm going to do something else. Those are choices based on discrimination. So discrimination is a preliminary process. Making a discrimination is a preliminary process to making up your mind and deciding to do something. Okay? Yeah. All right, well... It's okay, I can hear.
The super soul is, they don't need a super soul in Vaikuntha. I would like to know if you could elaborate a little bit on this. I remember reading the first Anucheda of Paramatma Sandarbha, and I thought that Jiva Goswami said that Paramatma Tattva exists in Vaikuntha.
Really? I don't think so. What part of, at the very beginning of the Paramatma? Okay, hold on a second. I'll open it up. Wait a second. I have to find it. Very first Anucheda Paramatma Sandarbha. It's
says, I can't open it. It won't let me open it. Why? Oh, because I have a dialogue box open. Okay, let me try. Okay. I have the first Anuchid. Okay. Yadapi paramat, the very first sentence, second sentence. Yadapi paramatmatvam vaikunte pi prabhur asti. Tadapi bhagavatangam tad syad. Itam jagadgatam vachyam. The Supreme Lord is the Supersoul in his personal kingdom, Vaikuntha, as well as elsewhere. But in Vaikuntha, his being the Supreme Soul is just one aspect of his being the personality of Godhead. Okay, so yes, he is the Supreme Soul in Vaikuntha, but there's no separate Paramatma. Now, there isn't any separate Paramatma in the ontological sense, meaning that the Paramatma and Bhagavan are the same thing, but they're different functions. There's a separate function of being the Supersoul in the material world because you have separated energies. The separated energies have to be dominated. The internal energies don't. Internal energies are ruled by love. But the material energies and the jivas have to be ruled by other means. That is the function of the Paramatma. To rule over all the separated energies, the marginal and material energies. You know, when the Lord is ruling over his internal energies and the jivas who are totally under the shelter of the internal energy, he doesn't have to function separately as Paramatma. He is the Supreme Soul, but there's no separate function of ruling over energies that have to be dominated. Yeah. Okay, so that's what... He is the Supreme Soul, but there's no separate function of being a Paramatma in Vaikuntha. And certainly there's no separate manifestation. What they see in their hearts is the same Lord that they see on the outside. Same exact, same, not a different form.
So then can it be said that he is the one who influenced Jai and Vijay to be not nice toward the Kumars?
It's the Lord Narayan himself and his energies who do the influencing. He does directly, but he also does through the agency of his various energies. Okay, now I think we'll move on to the next paragraph. Tata pralaya kalavasani Striya Urugendra Bhoja Bhujadanda Vishatta Diyo Vayamapite Sama Samadushongri Saroja Sudha Iti Vidvad Gona Gurubir Asmabir Api Nijalambanatwena Varnyamana Paramadivya Karana Gana Vichitro Pyasau Akarana Eva. Okay, so the personified Vedas are still talking now. We're continuing to paraphrase what they say. Moreover, he is a karana, without senses. Even though we, Shrutis, the supreme masters of the countless learned authorities, have described him as the object of our own affection, full in the variety of his supremely wonderful senses, even though we say he doesn't have any senses. And we say this in the statement we made at the end of the period of dissolution, which is part of these prayers of the personified Vedas. It's said in the beginning by Parikshit, or by Narada, who's narrating, I think Narada, that when it was time to start the creation again, the Vedas approached Lord Narayan and woke him up saying these prayers. Okay, this is one of the prayers. We will achieve the same nectar from your lotus feet that your consorts are able to relish because of their loving attraction to your mighty serpentine arms. for you look upon us and your consorts in the same way. So, okay, they say he's a Karana, but also they'd like to be embraced by the arms that he doesn't have. Okay. Kutaha Swarat Swena Sarupa Shakti Vishesha Siddha Pradur Bhava Visheshena Sarupenaiva Tat Tat Karanataya Rajase Tesham Sarupa Bhutta Twena Mukya Karanatva Ayogad Iti Bhavaha. How is he without senses? Okay? You say no senses, then you describe the senses. So what does it mean? He doesn't have any senses. By being self-luminous. That's how he doesn't have senses. Meaning that, addressing him, you appear splendidly, rajase, with a variety of senses by yourself, in your own personality. The special appearance affected by your special personal energies. In other words, because these senses belong to your inner self, it is not appropriate to call them instruments. Otherwise, if even you are made manifest by things of relative reality, how can you actually be self-luminous? Okay. Tesham. Okay. Anyata. Oh, I didn't read this last part. Anyata aupadika vastu dwara tavapi prakashe katam nama swaratvam sidyed iti cha. Ananda matram ajadam puranam ekam santam bahuda dvishyamanam. And then another statement, neha nanasti kinchana ityadi shuteh. Ananda matra kara paramukodaradi ityadi smitesh cha. This is verified by a number of statements of Shruti, including the statement, he is pure ecstasy only, Anandamatram, the never-aging ancient being, Ajaram Puranam, existing as one, he appears as many. And a statement, in this reality there is no kind of duality. And also such statements of the Smriti as, his hands, feet, mouth, abdomen, and so on are all pure ecstasy only. Okay, I don't have references for two of these statements. One of them, the second Shruti, is the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. The first one I don't know, and the Smriti I can't identify. Some Purana, probably. What do these statements say, actually? What's the point? This is verified. Which one? His hands, feet, mouth, abdomen, and so on are all pure ecstasy only? They are, aren't they?
Yeah.
You have a problem with that?
No.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, well, it says that, yeah, so we have statement that there's no duality in him. He's one, but he seems to be many. Okay, he's one, but he has variety. He has his body. Okay. Yeah, because they belong to him, to his essence. They're not separate. Something assumed. Our hands and body are something assumed. Because you can't even hold on to them for more than 80 years. Then they get taken away from you or they disintegrate. So they're not part of you because you can't keep them.
Okay. Commentary. Who are the Shrutis offering these prayers recorded near the end of the Bhagavatam? End of the Bhagavatam's 10th canto. How do eternal, authorless Vedic texts appear in person? In two different ways. In the material world, the Shrutis are personified by the seers who have received them from Vaikuntha in their meditation. Each hymn of the Vedas is identified as the contribution of one or another of these rishis. The prayers of the 10th canto, 87th chapter, are offered by the sages who are these personified Vedas. But ultimately, the Vedas themselves are also persons. And so they appear in their original forms in Vaikuntha, attending Lord Narayan on the four sides of his throne. Both the sages representing the Vedas in this world and their prototypes in Vaikuntha are sheltered servants of the personality of Godhead. For them, the beautiful body of their Lord is the focus of all attraction. Yet still, executing their duty, the Upanishads speak in philosophical language, terming him akarana, without senses. These same Upanishads here reveal, for once, at least their secret aspiration. To be, for once at least, their secret aspiration. I'm going to change that around. Reveal their secret aspiration, for once at least. To be dear, to be as dear to the Supreme Lord as his wives and girlfriends. They want to emulate the conjugal mood of the Lord's consorts, even if many of them cannot hope to actually fulfill that ambition. Since they meditate on embracing his arms, it must be concluded that they recognize he has arms. Some sages of the Vedas, some of them, met Lord Ramachandra during his exile in the Dandaka forest, expressing the desire to have a conjugal relationship with him. He asked them to wait for his reappearance as Krishna. And at that time, these most fortunate of the personified Vedas took birth as cowherd girls in Gokula. Okay, any questions? Oh, it's another paragraph. There is no duality in the personality of Godhead. Everything about him is non-different from his inner self. Only material bodies have separate faculties for cognition and action, which artificially make them appear alive. Material bodies are real products of the Supreme Lord's energies, but they are thought to be alive falsely. The Supreme Lord's form is simply ecstatic in all its parts, including his active limbs, the internal organs of his middle body, and his perceptive senses. Any comments or questions? Yes.
The living entities, the limbs and the senses are different from the living entity himself.
Yes.
Therefore, they are the instruments.
Yes.
Karana.
Yes.
And then the translation we just now we heard that it's not inappropriate to call the senses as instruments, something like that, of the Lords also. Because there is...
No. We read in 47.1, because the jiva has a sense of attachment to the senses, he possesses instruments. It is proper to say that the jiva possesses instruments. Now, did we contradict this now?
In this translation, just
in 47.2. Let's see. But it says here, because these senses belong to your inner self, it is not appropriate to call them instruments. That's the Lord's senses.
Yeah, how is that? Because there's no difference between the body of the Lord and...
Yeah, so it's not proper to call the Lord's senses instruments. But I think we said in 47.1, we can call the jiva's senses instruments. That's proper.
because the jivas are separate from their bodies. But the Lord's body is not separate from him, so it's not appropriate to call the senses that belong to the Lord, his own senses, it's not proper to call them instruments. Okay, that's straightened out. Okay, anything else? Madhu Mohanpur.
About that famous statement, Atasya Karyam Karanam Charityate.
Yes.
You once explained it in a class, and I just want to ask, because it says, it makes a generic statement about Krishna's or the Lord's having no karana at all. In other words, if we take this definition of karana and apply it to the verse, means that there is nothing which is separate from him, which he uses for fulfilling his own purposes.
Yes.
So how do we apply it to different energies and jivas, for instance? Do we imply from here that he doesn't, even though there are things separate from him, he doesn't use them for his own purpose?
Right. He doesn't. Yeah.
He doesn't exploit them in any way.
When an energy is separate from the Lord, it's no longer the source of his enjoyment. That's what the separation is. It's not a participant in his lila. As a separated energy, if you're actually separated and you're under the control of the material energy, in that sense, if you're under the control of the material energy, you're not participating in the Lord's enjoyment. If you're under the control of the internal energy, then you're being controlled through the internal energy. But the Lord is not using you as a material resource. He's using you only because, he's accepting you only because you're being introduced through the auspices of the internal energy. He enjoys his internal energies, and he can enjoy the jivas through the internal energy.
So,
but he doesn't enjoy them as material entities, whereas the jivas are trying to enjoy one another through the material agency.
So it seems to corroborate what...
Yes, go ahead.
Seems to corroborate what we discussed yesterday, that Krishna himself chooses where to draw the line between himself and not himself, and he seems to include his internal associates and his internal energies in the definition of himself, by even though ostensibly using them for his own enjoyment as instruments, but he doesn't feel them to be separate from him.
Well, they're not separate the way the material... There's different degrees of separation. They are separate, but they're called swabhaviki. His energies all are swabhaviki. Swabhaviki can mean autonomous. There's a difference between some difference. We have to understand subtle difference. The different words, they have different meanings. Swarupa and swabhava. Swarupa is your essence. Swabhava is the different aspect of your personality. But the energies of the Lord are the same as the Lord, but not exactly the same. There's difference also. But there's more difference, a much more definite difference, between him and his external energies, his separated energies. But the internal energies are also autonomous. They're distinct entities with their own consciousness, their own thoughts and feelings and capacities. That is a kind of separation, but less of a separation than the separation between the Lord and his external energy.
You said that the tattvas, which do not give pleasure to Krishna, are separate and therefore they're not included. They're not his his own senses and instruments for his own enjoyment.
Not instruments because he doesn't use them.
Yeah.
You know, this is your coat. I never wore your coat, so it's not my coat. It's yours. It's sitting there. I could put it on, but I never will, so it's not my coat.
What I wanted to ask is, there is a statement in Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj. He says, Antaranga chit shakti tatastha jiva shakti bahiranga maya tinakare prema bhakti. He says that there are three tattvas, antaranga, bahiranga, and tatastha, and all three of them engage in prema bhakti.
Yes, all the energies of the Lord are serving him, including the external energy. The jivas are serving him either directly or indirectly. Directly, if they're taking shelter of the internal potency, if they're engaged in devotional service, then they're serving the Lord and there's a loving exchange. The rebellious living entities
are taking shelter of the material energy, but also they, the demigods, and everybody in the world are like bulls with a rope tied around their noses, and they're you know, walking around the millstone, offering service to the Supreme Lord. Everything ends up being service to the Supreme Lord for his pleasure. But it's not Leela. There's no rasa there. Especially the Lord, the inert energy is also serving the Lord, but not by a loving exchange. There's the external energy doesn't have any consciousness to have a loving exchange. And the conditioned souls aren't in a fit consciousness to have a loving exchange. Their consciousness is deranged. But still, all of the energies are serving the Supreme Lord. You can understand it in some direct sense, and also all the energies are controlled by demigods or by higher beings. The external energies are all controlled by demigods who are doing service to the Lord, although mixed devotional service. So there's some devotion there. There's some personal connection between the demigods who control the material energy and the rebellious living entities. They're controlled by demigods who are some kind of devotees. So they do have a personal relationship with the Lord. And so through the demigods, the Lord is enjoying and controlling the rebellious living entities and the dead matter, but not directly.
It's just that the term prema bhakti seems to be an overstatement in this context, because
Let's say that
hard to imagine somebody
you wouldn't say that all the demigods are offering prema bhakti, yes.
Even if they're engaging us in Krishna service, but it's not going to be prema bhakti for two reasons. Well, first is that they're not engaged in prema bhakti, and second, we're being forced by them to do something without even ours being interested in doing.
Do I have the statement right that the internal, external and marginal potencies are all offering prema bhakti?
All three, yes.
Okay, but it doesn't say that every single individual in each of these categories, just that the categories are offering. So there's somebody in each category who's got prema bhakti. Among the jivas, there are the leaders of the jivas who are the pure devotees. They're among the demigods, some of them are pure devotees. Material nature is a devotee of the Lord. So everything under her auspices is serving him through her. So because there are pure devotees in each of those categories, or at least controlling those categories as deities, that way they're all serving him in love. Not all of the energies, but because the leaders of the energies are serving him in pure love, that way the energies are serving him. Okay, it's the best I can make out of it. Yes.
I remember we had a whole discussion about this topic previously. Haribol. Okay. That about this verse, Vilaji Mana is Yat Skatumichi Ikshapate Maya, that Maya Devi, she offers service and she does ungrateful task of her service,
yes,
to Krishna. So, and I remember you in one of the purport, you mentioned that she is pleasing Krishna by the service because she helps living entity to come back to him, and therefore she is a pure devotee.
Jiva Goswami explains in the Tattva Sandarbha, I think you've read it, that she doesn't like to cause suffering and entanglement, but she also doesn't like to see the rebellious living entities dissatisfying the Lord and working against him. So therefore, she goes ahead and does her job of punishing them. Elsewhere it must be said that pleases the Lord. I don't remember where. Yeah. But she's at least wanting to serve him and please him. He's trying to. Okay. If there are any other questions, yes. Jai Radha Krishna.
In the shloka, Krishna Vandam Trisha Krishna, Sangha Upanga Astra Parshadam.
Yes.
The Sangha and Upanga are the were the expansion and expansions of the Lord. And they are also called as limbs. And some limbs.
Yes, because, yes.
They're also called instruments, separate
Anga is not the word karana. Anga is part of your body. When you have a whole, maybe a living body, or it may just be a thing, has angas. We talk about devotional service having angas. So a body has limbs and organs. They're called angas. But even a physical thing can have parts, and they can be called angas also. But that's not the same idea as karana, instrument. They're not, that doesn't mean instrument. That is being talked about in reference to the Lord's incarnations, because every incarnation appears with a certain appearance of his limbs. He's got four arms, or sometimes two. Sometimes he's in a human body, sometimes an animal body or a demigod body. So different kinds of limbs. But he always has his limbs, and he always carries some weapons, Vishnu, whenever he appears. And so even in Kali Yuga, he also appears with his angas and upangas and his astras, which are explained by Baladeva Vibhushan in a few different ways. And Vishwanath Chakravarti, his principal associates, the holy name is his weapon, but there's also other interpretations.
Okay.
All right. So we'll stop here for today and continue with 47.3. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tat Dashi Bhagavat Sandarbha Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.